It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I like Schumer, but before he even knows the plan, say, oh, this is for the rich. It's for, he doesn't even know what the plan is, and he's screaming it's for the rich.
The American people should know that the money to pay for that giant tax cut for the rich is coming from somewhere, and it's likely to be coming from their pocketbooks.
And the president is sticking it right back to Senator Schumer. Schumer claims there are the votes to pass the Alexander Murray bill to continue subsidies to insurance companies.
Mr. President, come out and support the Alexander Murray bill. You've called it, quote, a very good solution already. Announce you'll support it, and it will pass through the Senate soon after.
But the president's chief counselor is suggesting, even if it passes the Senate and House, the president may veto it.
On this specific issue, the president is not going to sign into law or countenance a bailout for the insurance companies. He's here to help Americans.
Okay, so that's the way we start today. Sandy Rios with you. That was John Roberts on Special Report. That was Kellyanne Conway's voice you just heard in the background. You know, anytime Schumer is excited about a piece of legislation, I think, you know, it's probably good to oppose it. There's probably something to see there that's not good, because I would say that most people on the left, including Senator Chuck Schumer, do not have the good of the nation at heart. So the Alexander Murray bill, the president is saying he will not support it in any way. It has to do with health care. It is a bailout for insurance companies, which is something that President Obama and Republican leadership are all about. That's what they wanted to do, was shore up with your tax dollars these huge insurance companies, fill in the blanks, so that there would never be a downside for them with Obamacare. And that's why they supported it. They told us, remember, these big insurance companies told us that Obamacare was a great thing, was wonderful. They signed off on it. So did AARP, because there was money to be made. They got paid for doing that, and they were assured they would get tax dollars that would carry them while the rest of us suffered from the lack of good health care. Doesn't matter if you're covered. What matters is if you actually get treatment. That's the issue. If you have access to doctors and health care, that's what matters. It doesn't matter if you have a piece of paper in your drawer that says you're technically covered. If it's going to cost you an arm and a leg or your firstborn son to pay for the premium and the deductible. But I digress. So that was Chuck Schumer. Then he also said in the beginning, one of his statements, you can be sure if they're going to lower taxes, it's going to come out of your pocket. It'd help the rich. Well, you know, I've got a news flash. Half of the American population doesn't pay a cent in taxes. I don't know how we got to this point. I personally think that is a huge mistake. Each and every one of you should be paying something for the privilege of living here. Something. If it's 10% of your income, if it's 5%, you should be paying something. Because when you pay nothing, you don't value it. And I think we find a lot of people disgruntled, complaining, rioting in the streets, doing whatever they're doing because they have nothing vested. There are tremendous rewards in living in this country. That's why illegal immigrants are still trying to get across our border. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. So there are tremendous benefits. But Schumer is telling us that, you know, that this whatever they do with the taxes, it's going to come out of your pocket. Not half of your pockets, not half of you. And your pockets, because you don't pay anything. A good portion of you don't pay anything. And so the so-called rich, no matter what they do, if they give a tax break, they're going to call people who get a tax break a rich because they're rich, because they are the 50% of actually income earners in the United States, and they bear the entire burden of everything for the 50% that pay nothing. So You see how this works. And by the way, I got an email from a friend this morning who said that his insurance premium personally is going up 41.69% in 2018. Maybe that's some of you. You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Many of you are still stuck out there. Many of you in the hinterland in terms of healthcare. You don't know what to do because things are in such flux. But for this friend of mine, it's going up 41.69% in 2018. Isn't that something? By the way, in regard to taxes and the budget, Congressman Dave Brat will be joining us today. And so we'll talk to him because he's the economist, and he will know what's going on in the House, what's going on in the Senate, and fill in some of the blanks for us. So we'll talk to him shortly. Well, Mrs. Clinton is not happy about the most recent reports of the cozy deal that was made with the Russians, giving them 20% of America's uranium deposits. Remember, uranium is the element that's needed, the natural resource that is needed to make a nuclear bomb actually go off. It is in high demand, as you might imagine, and the Russians were eager to get a hold of ours. So they made a lot of dirty deals. And some people, yes, have been charged, but you never heard about that because the Justice Department under Barack Obama kind of kept it quiet. And under Bob Mueller, who started the investigation through the FBI as the FBI director, and then later James Comey, they just never bothered to mention that they actually knew that there was bribery and corruption going on with the Russians. In fact, the Obama Justice Department, with the help of Mrs. Clinton as Secretary of State, Eric Holder as the head of the Justice Department, and Tim Geithner, who was the Treasury Secretary at the time, sitting on a committee, decided it would be a good thing, really good, to give Russia 20% of our uranium deposit. That's really what happened. And all the while, the FBI had an investigation into the corruption and what was happening, and also knew that Bill Clinton got $500,000 for speaking one night. And concurrent, at least just happened to be during this period of time. We also know that the Clinton Foundation received millions from people that were owners of this company, Uranium One. I think 7 board members who ended up getting 20% of our uranium supply gave big amounts to the Clinton Foundation. Mrs. Clinton is not happy about that coming out. And of course, you know, there's nothing to it because she said so. Let's listen.
I would say it's the same baloney they've been peddling for years, and there's been no credible evidence by anyone. In fact, it's been debunked repeatedly and will continue to be debunked. I'm not surprised, but I think the real story is how nervous they are about these continuing investigations.
Last Congress, we and the Oversight Committee wanted to investigate the foundation and all the other payments involving the Clintons, and we were not allowed to do that by the leadership in the House for whatever reason. Well, now I think that this information is so explosive that there's no way you can justify not getting all the information on this.
That was Peter Schweitzer, who wrote Clinton Cash, which is a great book, by the way. I've never interviewed Peter on that. We should rectify that. I'm sure he could write 10 more chapters now. But that was Mrs. Clinton's response. It's baloney. Oh, it's just baloney. It's just the Republicans being nervous. I think, you know, the Republicans have had a year to be nervous about an investigation into some alleged collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians, and they should be a little less nervous because it seems to me that they just can't find anything. We heard yesterday that Robert Mueller is turning his investigation, at least widening it, to include John Podesta's brother. Well, you know, Tony, and could I just say that I actually think that that's kind of a head fake. Personally, we have known for a long, long time that Tony Podesta has had dealings with the Russians that are very unseemly. And so now suddenly Bob Mueller is saying he's investigating Democrats too. Oh, yeah, no, not to worry. Yeah, we'll see. And I saw Tony Podesta's company issued a statement. We're fully cooperating with Bob Mueller's investigation. I bet they are, because it's probably a pretty safe investigation, given that Robert Mueller was the FBI director when this whole sordid episode of the Russians colluding to get a hold of our uranium took place and didn't bother to tell anyone. The FBI was on that and was discovering corruption. In fact, brought charges and there were plea deals, but no one ever heard about that. So I'm sure Bob Mueller is now investigating the Podesta. Oh, yes, sirree. I'm sure he is. Call me cynical. Yes, I am. Catherine Herridge, I had kind of an update on the investigation. And she talks about Fusion GPS, which was that company that did that untruthful, that's the kindest word I can say, dossier on President Trump. Let's listen to Catherine.
The special counsel Robert Mueller's office is exploring whether Democratic lobbyist Tony Podesta's firm violated the Foreign Agents Registration Act when it worked on behalf of Ukraine. In a statement, a spokesperson for Podesta, who is the brother of former Hillary Clinton campaign manager John Podesta, said they complied with government rules and are fully cooperating with investigators. And there are new developments in the battle over the controversial unverified Trump dossier. The matter is now in Washington's district court after an emergency hearing to block a House intelligence committee subpoena. By Wednesday, federal judge Tanya Shutkin, an Obama administration appointee, will decide whether TD Bank must provide financial records for the firm behind the research, Fusion GPS, that may reveal sources and who paid for the anti-Trump file. Republican Senator Tom Cotton, who sits on the intelligence committee, questioned the firm's resistance.
Fusion GPS has gone to the greatest lengths possible to try to conceal who paid them, which makes me think it was probably a Democratic political operative or a Russian intelligence service.
In March, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee relied heavily on the dossier's unverified claims when he read a dramatic six-minute statement into the record alleging collusion between Trump campaign associates and Russia.
Is it possible that all of these events and reports are completely unrelated? Yes, it is possible. But it is also possible, maybe more than possible, that they are not coincidental.
But 8 months later, the Senate Intelligence Committee leaders said they were no closer to knowing the facts after the former British spy who gathered the information refused to cooperate.
As it relates to the Steele dossier, unfortunately, the committee has hit a wall.
All right, so just to kind of do a synopsis, if I can, I've been talking about this dossier, you know, for months, and sometimes I'm surprised myself at the number of times that things that we discuss actually become the center of the news. That particular dossier was a fabrication. I told you how salacious it was. I told you that John McCain brought it, went over to Europe to pick it up, and then brought it back, gave it to BuzzFeed, who was being sued, by the way, by people mentioning the dossier, because it was complete fabrication and it was slander. So BuzzFeed is in a court right now defending themselves, but John McCain is the one who handed it off. And now some people are saying that John McCain might be the one that handed it to the FBI that got this whole thing started. However, we think the FBI, we have heard, and I've repeated this to you, that the FBI may have been one of the entities that paid Fusion GPS to prepare the dossier on Donald Trump. And that the FBI, it looks like, we think, we wouldn't know for sure because they are refusing subpoenas. They're refusing to talk. The FBI is refusing to talk. But we think it's possible that the FBI used that dossier to go into a FISA court and to seek a warrant to surveil Trump staffers or Trump campaign operatives. So knowing, using, okay, see the worst case possibility is that the FBI paid for this fake dossier, ginned it up. Also, they gave it to the British, by the way, and some think that when they went into the FISA court, they used the British intelligence, which was just echoing what this fake, it was. They read the same fake report, that they used it to bolster their requests for these surveillance that they did of the Trump campaign. And so this is what I'm telling you, this is a very important story. The FBI won't speak. They won't respond to any kind of subpoenas. I don't know who's gonna make them mind. Just wondering. And so it is kind of a mess, except the interesting thing to me is, after all of these months and Mueller hiring all these attorneys, they can't find anything colluding. The Russians colluding with Donald Trump. Isn't that something? This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Last week, Jesus used a friend to illuminate a situation in which I had not displayed love toward another person.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Now, I sensed the Spirit of God nudging my heart, and hopefully I was a little more transformed into being like Jesus. Personal transformation occurs as I lay down my personal rights and love others for who they are. Transformation begins on the inside, and God uses the thoughts of the Bible to transform me into a more godly character. Then God can use those changes in my personal character to illustrate His power and to love those who have not encountered Jesus. Now that's the start of hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Halloween's a great time to reach out and give school treats to your neighborhood kids.
Welcome to Tips with youth educator Dr. Bill Ziegler.
I love Halloween, and I love the opportunity to stand at the door and greet Halloweeners as they come. But parents, I'd encourage you to think about giving out something more than just sugar and candy. I'd ask you to consider giving out school supplies, pens, pencils, post-it notes, notebooks, backpacks. I think these school supplies can go a long way in helping children find success in school. Plus, it also stresses the importance of learning when connecting with kids in your neighborhood. So take time this Halloween to not just hand out those sugary treats, they're fun to get, but also give some school supplies and consider blessing a child with giving them a full backpack of school supplies to give out this Halloween season.
We have great educational resources available at 4tips.org, or you can call our toll-free number at 888-798-1124.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I've realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska is facing widespread controversy after he blasted the First Baptist Church of Dallas, Texas, for inviting Sean Hannity to speak. Hannity was invited by Dr. Robert Jeffers, the senior pastor of the historic church. He was sharing his personal religious testimony, as well as promoting an upcoming faith-based movie, Let There Be Light. Sasse accused Jeffers in a flurry of tweets of mixing politics and religion. It was a charge that Jeffers did not take kindly.
I want you to stop and think about this. A U.S. senator attacking a pastor for what he's doing in his own church. That is absolutely unprecedented that he would do such a thing.
Jeffers was a guest on my nationally syndicated radio program.
Senator Sasse owes our church an apology.
The senator's office refuses to return my calls, but let's hope Senator Sasse does the right thing and apologizes. His conduct of late is more becoming of a Democrat than a Republican. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Maisha Johnson said that the president's phone call, quote, made her cry even worse. Of course, the widow of the late LaDavid Johnson, the sergeant among the four service personnel killed in Niger earlier this month. Mrs. Johnson today in her first televised interview was strongly critical of her conversation with the president.
The president said that he knew what he signed up for, but it hurts anyways. And it made me cry because I was very angry at the tone of his voice and how he said it. Like he couldn't remember my husband's name. If my husband is out here fighting for our country and he risked his life for our country, why can't you remember his name? And that what made me upset and cry even more, because my husband was an awesome soldier.
The president responded almost immediately on Twitter, saying, I had a very respectful conversation with the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson and spoke his name from beginning without hesitation. Mrs. Johnson also claimed that she's yet to be able to see her husband's body, saying that his coffin could be empty for all I know. Today, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joe Dunford, addressed that this afternoon.
There are times when we make a suggestion to the family that they may not want to review the remains. At the end of the day, the policy is it's the family's decision as to whether or not they do that. So I can tell you what the policy is. I don't know what happened in the case of Mrs. Johnson.
course, all this comes on a day in which there are a number of questions, in particular on Capitol Hill, about what happened that night in particular, but also about the larger U.S. role in Niger and in Africa.
If the Congress doesn't believe that they're getting sufficient information, then I need to double my efforts to provide them with information. Secretary Mattis and I are committed to make sure that we satisfy the needs of the Congress for the information they need to provide oversight.
We also learned today, Brett, that there's apparently drone video of that attack. The general said today that he had not seen it. Of course, this is a part of a very large mission in Africa. Some 6,000 U.S. troops there, over 53 countries, including 800, a little bit more than 800, actually, in Niger, Brett.
Yeah, I think as we hear about that military operation in Niger, if we actually hear the details of it, I think it's going to be pretty upsetting, to be honest with you. They found two of the bodies, and I think one of the bodies was the body of this widow who you heard in that clip, who's very upset with President Trump. She said what he said really upset her, made her cry. The thing that Frederica Wilson, the congresswoman from Florida, was sitting in the car listening to the call from the president and went public on just criticizing the president for the things that he had said. You know, that's a sideshow. The issue is the killing of these soldiers. It's the grief of the widow and all the other families that that were involved in that. And so Ms. Wilson has made it a sideshow. And I could also say, this did not occur to me. I heard someone else say it. I give credit here. I never thought of the fact that, you know, John Kelly in his press conference explained in detail that when a president is going to call someone in this case, and they don't always call because sometimes in conflicts there are too many people, and it's also very hard to make these phone calls. But when they do that, someone calls ahead and says the president would like to call, gets permission, sets a time, and then the president calls. So Frederica Wilson didn't just happen to be in the room. She was there. Let's just say she knew what she was doing. They put it on speaker, and I think it could be argued likely there to find fault and fan the flames and cause trouble. Now, Frederica Wilson, of course, says she's a rock star as a result of that. I'm going to tell my kids I'm a rock star. As President Trump is talking about what I said. They will not let this go. In Niger, what I wanted to say, and I plan to go into this in more detail on a different day, but it looks as though this one soldier, his body wasn't found for 2 days, and I do know that it was members of the, I don't know if it was the Islamic State or if it was Boko Haram, but it was the same philosophy, same Islamists who were the ones that attacked these four men. And I think when we find out what happened to them, it's going to be horrible, honestly. And I'm just telling you, that's my hunch. I have not read that. I'm reading between the lines. But now in regard to making this political, ridiculously political, Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC, after John Kelly made his speech and after Frederica Wilson, you know, talked about how she's now a rock star because she called the president out for saying to this grieving widow that he knew what he was getting into, but it hurts nonetheless. So that's the terrible thing that the president said to the widow. So here's what Lawrence O'Donnell says. John Kelly never sat beside a student like Frederica Wilson in his elementary. The language about black people in John Kelly's white neighborhood was exactly the same language about black people that was used at the time in white communities in the segregated South. He suggests, meaning Lawrence O'Donnell suggests, that when John Kelly referred to Frederica Wilson as an empty barrel, was a racist slur. Of Kelly's neighborhood, O'Donnell said, it was a neighborhood in which calling someone who looked like Frederica Wilson an empty barrel was the kindest thing that would have been said about her. You remember John Kelly said in his remarks that women were considered sacred in the past. He was making the point that nothing's sacred anymore. The death of someone, certainly a hero who died on behalf of the country, used to be sacred, and now it's being politicized. He said, and women used to be treated with respect, and it was sort of sacred, sacrosanct, the way we treated women, but no more. Okay, so this is O'Donnell's response to that. You know what wasn't sacred when Kelly was a kid growing up where he was growing up? Black women or black people. And oh, by the way, women were not sacred either. They were not honored. John Kelly's neighborhood in the Catholic parish where he grew up and I grew up, women were beaten by their husbands, drunken husbands, as a normal weekly occurrence. And their parish priest would tell those women, you can't get divorced or you'll be excommunicated. So John Kelly, based on what he said in his press conference, according to Lawrence Donnell, is a racist because he's Irish Catholic, grew up in an Irish Catholic neighborhood, and Lawrence O'Donnell knows all about it. So this is the sick, sordid pus that comes out of the left. It's just amazing. It's like an infection. It's like it is so deep and wicked and evil, and it just continues to ooze. And we just have to learn to shut it out. We've got to combat it, and we may have to do more than shut it out. I'm not sure what the solution is, but good men are going to have to rise up and stop this nonsense. And order must be restored, and sanity, and honor, and dignity, and respect. All right, so yesterday, the Kate Steinle trial began in San Francisco. And rather than me reminding you about the story, I'll let Claudia Cowan from Fox fill you in.
The family of Kate Steinle had nothing to say as they entered the courtroom. Kate's mother, Liz, her brother, Brad, and the jury will hear testimony from her father, Jim Steinle. In media interviews and on Capitol Hill, he has described how on July 1st, 2015, he was walking with his daughter on a popular San Francisco pier when she was shot in the back.
I'm walking down the pier, arm in arm with my daughter and a very close friend. She stops, she takes a selfie, she turns around, and shot. As she fell, she said, help me, Dad.
The gunman, 45-year-old Jose Inez Garcia Zarate, who also went by Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, has multiple felony convictions and was deported from the U.S. at least five times. He was awaiting another deportation when drug charges against him were dropped, and the local sheriff's department released him without first notifying immigration authorities. The defense says Zarate had no motive to kill Steinle and that her death was an accident. Zarate claims he found the gun on the pier and it fired when he picked it up. Prosecutors argue that as a convicted felon, Zarate should have never had a gun. There were no eyewitnesses, and both sides are using surveillance video of the pier shot from a quarter mile away. Zarate's lawyer says what it shows is open to interpretation.
While Garcia Zarate is seated on the pier, there are over 50 opportunities when people are walking one way or the other for them to see him in possession of a firearm, and nobody ever says that they saw that.
And there will be a lot of testimony about that gun, which had been stolen 4 days earlier from the car of a federal agent.
Did you notice in that report the contradiction? The defense attorney saying no one ever saw him with a gun, and Zarate himself has confessed he had a gun. He says he picked it up, he found it in a bag. So, you know, defense attorneys are doing everything they can to show that it was an accident, that it was a ricochet, that he didn't mean to hit Kate. But the point, that's really the point to me, is that he's an illegal immigrant who was deported many, many times and allowed to come back and protected. And whether it was a ricochet or not, laws were broken and sanctioned by the city of San Francisco that caused the death of this young girl. And by the way, people are telling me, I'm reading, that in the trial, nothing is being said about his legal status. Not a word. That's not important. Instead, the defense attorneys, of course, are trying to prove that, man, he just an accident. He didn't really do that. Nobody saw him. You know, I'm trying to get this guy off. And I suppose if he gets off, he'll be able to stay because now California, of course, is a sanctuary state. And so I want to weave in another story here because we are learning now. According to the ICE director, the suspected wine country arsonist is an illegal alien Mexican national. He was deported several times. He is an arsonist. In fact, let me read the statement from his first name. His last name is Holman. He is the ICE director. And the guy that set the fire is Jesus Fabian Gonzalez. ICE issued a detainer request for Jesus Fabian Gonzalez five times in the past year alone, including the one issued on October 16th in relation to his most recent arrest on suspicion of arson. All of the arrests were made by Sonoma County on various felony and misdemeanor charges. Okay, so here's the statement from Holman. Once again, a non-cooperative jurisdiction has left their community vulnerable to dangerous individuals and preventable crimes. ICE lodged a detainer against Jesus Gonzalez with Sonoma County jail officials on October 16th, following his arrest on felony charges for maliciously setting fire to a property. This is especially troubling in light of the massive wildfires already devastating the region. Over the past year, ICE has lodged detainers against Mr. Gonzalez after four separate arrests by Sonoma County on various felony and misdemeanor charges. ICE was never notified of Mr. Gonzalez's various releases. Additionally, Mr. Gonzalez has been returned to his home country of Mexico on two separate occasions. The residents of Sonoma County and the state of California deserve better than policies that expose them to avoidable dangers. Non-cooperation policies now enshrined in California state law ensure only one thing. Criminals who would otherwise be deported will be released and left free to reoffend as they please. And it really is shocking. It defies any kind of logic, any kind of humanity that Jerry Brown, Nancy Pelosi, and other of the leaders out of California are fine with the policies. They just declared California a sanctuary state. So here we have this trial of Kate Steinle, who was killed by an illegal immigrant on the pier, walking in broad daylight. The guy had been deported several times. He was a criminal. He's wandering around, and so he shoots and kills Kate Steinle. She's dead. She's an American citizen just walking with her family. That could have been prevented, and their response is to make California a sanctuary state. And now they have all of these people who died in these horrible fires in California, and we know that there is an arson on the loose who's been deported several times. He's been arrested, and they've released him into the population. And now, so we don't know if he's responsible for all of that fire, but we know he's responsible for some of it. You know, it's impossible to trace all those big fires. You know, where did it finally, you know, start? Who can figure that out? But they know that he is a known arsonist, and we know that he played a part in it. And so Governor Brown's response, California, sanctuary state. And all of these people are dead. You know, it seems to me, if I were a family, this is where I'm not in favor of running out and suing. I'm just not. Because I always try to explain, you know, the money comes from somewhere. It doesn't come out of the clouds. It doesn't come from the sky. It generally comes from you and me indirectly. Higher charges, higher prices, higher taxes, higher fees. We pay for all these huge settlements. So I'm not generally in favor of this. But I am in favor of it if it's a suit over something legitimate where it is negligence. And I think, you know, a class action lawsuit of the victims of illegal immigrants in California, suing personally, Jerry Brown personally, Nancy Pelosi and the others who think this is just fine, this is just hunky-dory, would, you know, be something to consider. And by the way, ISIS, in their latest publication, is, praising the devastation of California wildfires. You may or may not know that they are encouraging their own members to use fires to devastate our country. Suggested target locations for arson attacks, I'm reading this from PJ Media, in the magazine stated include houses and apartment buildings, forest areas adjacent to residential areas, factories that produce cars, furniture, clothing, flammable substances, gas stations, hospitals, bars, dance clubs, nightclubs, banks, car showrooms, schools, universities, as well as churches and Shiite temples. The options are vast, leaving no excuse for delay. So says ISIS. They see that wonderful success in California, killing Americans and doing so much damage and encouraging their, you know, followers to do the same. These are dangerous times. It requires strict law enforcement. It requires men of character and women of character and valor and courage, not like the ones we see serving us in the House and the Senate. There's an exception, though, because joining me next is one of them. Congressman Dave Brat from Virginia will join us. We're going to switch topics. We're going to talk about the budget, the taxes, when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You shall have no other gods before me. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Among the Ten Commandments, the first thing God sought to prohibit in the nation of Israel was idolatry. Idolatry includes worship of statues and inanimate objects, but it also includes excessive attachment, veneration, and reverence for any person other than the Lord. I believe God did that because he knew men would be tempted to defer their judgment and reasoning to the experts. Based on their academic accomplishment, based on the numbers of letters behind their names, we would accept their opinion as facts. But remember, the Bible tells us the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. If you fear God, you have a leg up on the competition.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you something good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
Exploring the Word is all about Jesus, because Jesus is on every page of the Bible, but sometimes people don't see him.
Bert Harper of Exploring the Word.
So we're taking a microscope and finding Jesus in each book of the Bible. He's there. And Alex and myself on Exploring the Word, we're going to try to bring that out, and it will be a blessing.
Join Bert and Alex each weekday at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Protecting your eyes is a big deal, and therefore, a big business. If you've ever gotten a pair of prescription sunglasses, you know what I'm talking about. You can choose your color and tint, get the polarized, get the UV 400 protection, get the anti-scratch coating. You can pay a small fortune to protect your eyes from the sun. So let me ask you a question. Do you give the same kind of care to protecting your heart? Proverbs 4:23 says, "Keep your heart with all vigilance." Or as another translation puts it, "Guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it." And one of the best ways you can do that is to invest in your walk with Jesus, spending time in prayer and reading God's Word daily. Anchor Devotional can help. Learn how you can get started today. Visit getanchor.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 34 years ago this week, Iranian operatives killed 241 Marines in Beirut, Lebanon. To massacre our troops, the mullahs detonated the largest non-nuclear explosion in history, and they got away with it. Retired Navy Admiral James Ace Lyons recounts how he prepared a military attack that would have decisively retaliated against the perpetrators, then known as the Amal Militia. But his forces never received authorization to launch their airstrikes. From that day to this, Iran's regime and other Sharia supremacists the world over have been inspired to believe that they will succeed in killing many more of us with impunity and ultimately force Americans to submit to their totalitarian Sharia doctrine. If they are to be disabused of this supposedly divinely directed notion, we better stop accommodating these avowed enemies and start making them pay for their actual or incipient violence against us. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
You don't have to be a partisan nose to smell a rat. But I tell you, this plan stinks.
I like Schumer. But before he even knows the plan, say, oh, this is for the rich. It's for, he doesn't even know what the plan is. And he's screaming, it's for the rich. We're adjusting so that there's no way that the middle class doesn't greatly benefit.
We want to put more money in your pocket. We want to make retirement a reality for you.
And the president and the vice president putting their full muscle behind this, going to Capitol Hill tomorrow.
I want to get it by the end of the year, but I'd be very disappointed if it took that long.
All right, so there it is, this furious activity in the House and Senate to try to establish a budget and then move to tax reform. I want to repeat what I said earlier. When Senator Schumer talks about helping the rich and hurting the poor on taxes, you know, the whole notion, 50% of Americans pay nothing. So I guess by definition, the 50% of the rich, we're the rich. Those of us that pay something must be the rich. So this tax is going to benefit us because we're the only ones that pay any tax. Congressman Dave Brat is an economist, and he would probably laugh at my analogy because he has a far more sophisticated view of how to handle our money. He represents Virginia, the 7th District. You remember he's on the show so often. He's an economist as well as a professor, and defeated Eric Cantor in a surprise upset victory probably how many years ago now, Congressman Brat? Was that?
Three years ago. Three to four.
Okay. So anyway, we still herald that success, and we're very happy about that. And it was over the issue of immigration, by the way. Before you joined me, I was talking about Kate Steinle's trial and also about the wildfires in California being set by, well, in part, by illegal immigrants
right.
who've been deported. It's just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and thank goodness for people like you that have been on that issue from the beginning. It's huge. And that's one of them, like spending in D.C. The swamp doesn't want to get anywhere near it because it's linked to cheap labor. But it's hurting the country. It's hurting the middle class with cheap wages. It's hurting through crime and drugs. And that you've been on top of that for years. So I applaud you. And I'm glad you're coming to Goochland in our district in a little bit to be with us.
Oh, well, all right, since you said that. Since you said that, Thursday night at Goochland High School Auditorium, it will be my pleasure to be speaking alongside of Congressman Dave Brat to the good people of Goochland. So if you would like to come, it's free at 7 o'clock in the auditorium there, and we would just love to see you. Congressman Brat, you know, I just read, I'm sorry, I'm throwing things at you, I didn't expect to, so I just read this morning that George W. Bush, during Katrina, after in the days after Katrina, changed the law to do, I can't remember the name of the law, but it was to do away with the minimum wage. It lowered the wages of construction workers, and they also allowed businesses to hire illegal immigrants to work on construction projects after Katrina. And I just read story after story of American-born workers who were sent home because they were told on these construction
yeah.
sites that, you know, we don't need you. We have Mexican laborers, and they work for less than you. And what? How detrimental? It was into the thousands. How detrimental that was to the economy of that area, and that was kind of the beginning of the Bush policy, really, in open borders.
Yep. Well, and unfortunately, our own side has been weak on this as well. We expect it from the Democrats, but it really is stark, right? I mean, the best phrasing of this I've ever heard is, why in the world, right, the Democrats especially, why would you put the interest of non-citizens ahead of citizens of your own country? And that's what we're doing systematically, right? Where our citizens are being asked to pay for K-12 education, for emergency room visits, for elaborate welfare systems, and putting up with the harms while they're losing their job, and in some of the cases that I know you've covered, being forced to train in the people who are replacing them.
Yeah.
And so the stories are just unbelievable. And right now, on the front page today of Politico, I think it is, you might want to take a peek at this thing, right? But they're moving forward on DACA in the Senate. And you know what the Senate will do, right? They couldn't repeal Obamacare, and now they have a Democrat bill they want to push in a Republican Senate.
Yeah.
And so on DACA, you can imagine what's coming. And guess what's not in there? E-Verify, anything that will actually solve the problem and shut down the border, right? They'll promise more interior enforcement and all these fancy words, more officers or whatever. But if the officers aren't given the authority to deport illegals that have committed crimes and et cetera, at what good is it? And so Paul Ryan at the beginning of the year promised that he would pass all five of Chairman Goodlatte's immigration bills through the House floor this year. And the year's coming to an end, and so I'm going to try to hold his feet to the fire and our leadership's feet to the fire so we get some progress, because we need E-Verify, we need a border solution, the wall is permanent, and you'll see the Democrats want a permanent solution for DACA, but they won't give us a permanent solution for anything that shuts down the border, right? It's always temporary, so their next president or executive can turn it back.
Yeah.
And so that that, unfortunately, is the lay of the land. And then, fortunately, our leadership's getting it better on this tax package than we did on Obamacare.
All right, well, let's...
And I feel pretty good about that.
Okay, so let's talk about that because you know why. We really do. This is the thing that is being dealt with right this very minute. Now, the Senate passed a budget last week, and so the House has to deal with that. So, from your estimation, are these budgets going to be compatible?
Yeah, well, they're going to have to be. And so we, the House Freedom Caucus fought pretty hard for some spending cuts, and we found $200 billion in savings, and we're going to lose all that we fought for. So we're not happy with it. And then the deficit for this year is $666 billion, 666,
wow.
Not a good number, right? And so that's under Republican stewardship of the budget. And so it's like, you've got to be kidding, right? So none of us like the budget, but we've already committed to the spending months ago, right? And so now the budget vote that we're talking about in the Senate and the House is just instructions to let tax reform go through. And so we're going to vote yes on that to get tax reform. And then the Freedom Caucus is asking leadership to make sure we pass that tax reform and show us the bill within 2 weeks, because the swamp right now is going to kick it into high gear, and we're losing every pay for. I hate to use these technical terms because I know, but up here in D.C. in the swamp, you have to pay to give people their money back. I mean, so you can see how upside down it is, right? But we have to pay for it. So we had, the state and local deductions and whatever. That was $1.5 trillion. Now people are complaining about that. Well, if we lose the pay for it, then we will not be able to give you money back in your pocket. We won't be able to lower your rate like we promised. And so that's the next big fight. The document that the House and the Senate and the President produced, and Trump was the lead on this with the lower rates and the middle class tax cut, are under threat now, because if we lose the money to pay for them, we will not end up with significant tax reductions, and we won't end up with economic growth. And so that's the key. Keep the pressure on us like crazy.
So the bottom line is that neither the House, at least the leadership, or the Senate, wants to cut any spending, and yet they want to give tax cuts. So they want to have it both ways. In other words, it'd be like our personal budget. Let's spend more money each month for our family, but let's don't cut back on any of the spending that we have. We have still the same amount of income, but we're going to spend more, and we're not going to cut back on anything. And somehow that's going to work out right. That's basically what's happening, right?
No, that's absolutely right. And we are addicted to spending. It's just so people know, right? We're gonna spend $4 trillion, just roughly speaking, is our budget, and we're only bringing in, $3.4 trillion. And so there's your $600 billion, and now it's up to 666, which is a nasty number, right? So it's bad news. We're almost adding $1 trillion to the debt, right? So the deficit is the amount you add to the debt every year. The debt's at $20 trillion. We're adding about $1 trillion. And so in 10 years, you can expect to have about $30 trillion in debt if we keep on that path. And that's on top of the $100 trillion we owe to the young kids for Medicare and Social Security that we can't pay in law. And those things are two-thirds of the budget, and we can't touch it. And so we're in for a guaranteed fiscal train wreck, right, at the government spending level in about 10 to 15 years. It's guaranteed. It's in law. It's on paper. It will happen. It's not a financial crisis, right? It's not a Wall Street thing like in 08, but it's a guaranteed fiscal collapse. And and unfortunately, I'm giving my own side a little hard time here, but the Democrats, the progressive budget they put in 2 weeks ago raises taxes $10 trillion. And so you would think, well, maybe they'll pay down the debt. They spend more than $10 trillion, and the debt goes up even higher than the Republican budget that cuts taxes. So I cannot begin to tell you how out of sync this bubble is here with the American people. And so have your folks nationwide, right? Go to DaveBratt.com. I try to explain all these things on my posts. I try to post useful articles and keep people posted as to what's really going on.
You know, the thing that I think a lot of people don't understand, and I'd add myself in that category, we have a Republican majority in the House. We have a Republican majority in the Senate. And generally, when the leadership passes a bad bill, you'd think it's they say they have to do that in order to get Democratic votes. Well, my understanding is that with the Senate bill, they've passed, they provided a way where they only have to get 51 votes. So they can't find 51 Republican senators who actually think there should be a cut in something?
No, you're exactly right. Not even close. I mean, we're talking massive spending increases. We're not talking cuts in anything. The Democrats were messaging like crazy on the health care bill that we were going to cut, you know, some of the Medicaid and health. And that was totally false. We're going to reduce the rate of growth from 9%, which will bankrupt us even quicker, but we're going to add slots, an increase in people covered, and add spending 4% a year, which is more than the, you know, wage rate that people are getting back home. People back home aren't getting 4% raises, they, you know, in our dreams.
You know, I want to ask you something else, because I know that in the Senate, we all know, and, you know, we see it up close and personal, but we also read about it, that there is this nervousness about the 2018 elections, because it's just some of those really rotten senators, I'll say that for you, are probably going to be out. God willing, they're going to be out. How about the House? What's the mood in the House? Is there fear over some sort of a constituent backlash in 2018?
Oh, sure. And, I mean, that explains why we're voting the way we are, right? Because if we would have added competition in health care, you would have had some instability for a year or two, right? As you go back to a free market system with lower prices, the big insurance companies would have been scared. And then voters get scared. And then that's why leadership won't take the hard moves, because they're scared of losing seats.
But Rome is burning,
and so it's like it's time to get it straight.
But I guess let me phrase it a little differently. I'm actually wondering if the leadership in the House isn't a little nervous about their futures, like the leadership in the Senate, because people are the jig is up. People know what's happening in the House,
yeah.
Congressman. They figure this out. They know what they're doing, and they know Rome is burning, and they're wondering why the leadership doesn't get that. So are they concerned, the leadership, about what's going to happen to them in 2018?
Yeah, well, on the Senate side, Mitch is under assault for good reason. On the House side, we got 270 bills waiting on the Senate side. And we did, you know, I wouldn't call it a repeal, but we did a little something on health care, and at least we passed something, but it was not a repeal. And so there's probably less worry on our side, but most Americans don't make any distinctions like that, right? They if we don't get the job done as the House and the Senate together, most Americans say, I don't, you know, I'm not splitting the difference. You're all guilty, right, including me. And so we got to get our act together on this tax piece and deliver for the middle class, or else we're going to be in big trouble, and we should be.
We need to get a Steve Bannon pack going after all House members that are not members of the Freedom Caucus. That's what I'm going to propose. Oh, I'm not kidding, actually.
Yeah,
I really do think that.
I always say, just look at the people who don't keep their word, right?
Yes.
I mean, your audience pays attention to the spiritual dimensions and the Judeo-Christian tradition. Well, Republicans all run on the Republican creed, the Republican platform. They run ads promising to do all of that. And then we didn't repeal Obamacare. There was no vote even close to repealing Obamacare. And so, and on taxes. And so, right, if people are not keeping their word, that's fair game.
Yes, absolutely. Congressman Dave Bratt, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Congressman Bratt, and I will be at Goochland High School Auditorium this Thursday
awesome.
Night at 7 o'clock, and we'd love to see you. Congressman, thank you so much for making time.
Yeah, you are beloved out there, and they all love you. They're looking forward to this like crazy, so I can't wait to see you. We'll have a great night.
All right, thank you so much. All right, go forth and do some good stuff today. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.